This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, Master Connector of Aftermarket Professionals here, Carm Capriotto, and welcome to the Town Hall Academy, episode 214. Hey, did you ever get burned out in a Zoom meeting? The pandemic has caused us social creatures to go indoors and away from our friends at conferences and training events. However, technology, they stepped in to keep us in the loop and engaged. Now, Zoom was embraced along with other video conferencing platforms to give us virtual training and even cocktail parties. Hey, just talking to industry friends, I found for the majority, we are Zoomed out. Now, is that a real verb? So it was time to talk about it. This panel says they are maxed out on virtual training, but we took it a step further. We all realize that virtual is here to stay. We'll have hybrid training as we move forward, some face-to-face and some virtual, and we're going to talk about that. The panel says the presenters need to learn new virtual training techniques, and the participants, well, they need to participate. A very eager panel that has some great ideas on how to Zoom. Hey, I'm grateful to Shop Marketing Pros and Shopware for sponsoring the Academy. Now, here's something to think about. How often do your advisors play phone tag? You know, every ring, every voicemail, it's time taking on a stall job. Well, Shopware's digital communication is easy as the customer clicks yes. Find out more at GetShopware.com. Hey, when someone searches for a shop, who are they finding? Your competitors? Well, it should be you. The good people over at Shop Marketing Pros know how to drive website traffic and make Google work for you on the web at shopmarketingpros.com. You find my guests' bios and their previous episodes at remarkableresults.biz/A214. Hey, thanks for being here in the front row of life in the auto service aftermarket. Hey, good afternoon, everyone. It's Carm Capriotto. It's Town Hall Academy. Oh, wow. What a topic we have today, brought to you by the Remarkable Results Radio Podcast Studio. Wow, Zoom burnout. Can you believe Zoom burnout? I've been on a bunch of Zoom calls. I actually am responsible for doing a bunch of them. I guess some of you can all blame me, I guess. I have one hell of a panel, the biggest panel I have ever had on any one of my Town Hall Academies in a long, long time. Jackie Hauer, ladies first, Zimmerman's Automotive out in Mechanicsburg, PA. Great to have you here, Jackie.
Thank you.
Justin Morgan is here, tech support for LMV Bavarian. Are you still the tech ambassador for AES Wave?
I am, although with, you know, times being what they are, it's been a little difficult to be an ambassador except remotely. But yeah, still doing that.
Got it. Anthony Williams, Special Project Manager, CarQuest Technical Institute. Hello, Anthony. I think it's your first time on a town hall.
Yeah, actually, I think we've done a couple of Remarkable Results before.
Yes, we have. We've done some shows, but first time on town hall. Jim Kokonis, Senior Curriculum Developer, CTI, WTI.
How are you doing?
You've been on before. Great contributor. Thank you so much. Kent Bullard is here, Institute for Automotive Business Excellence. Hello, Kent.
Hello.
Kent and I were on the phone a couple, 3-4 weeks ago, and he goes, I don't know, do you have any Zoom burnout and any Zoom fatigue? And I said, oh, great idea for a show. So thank you for anchoring this for us, Kent. Vinny Lucido is here, Community Conscious Car Care, Reno, Nevada. Hello, Vinny.
Hey, good to see you.
Same here, man. And Scott Palava, Lonsdale Auto Works, Lonsdale, Minnesota, and the founder of ASOG. Everybody knows ASOG. Good to have you here, Scott.
Glad to be here.
Look, let's talk about this Zoom burnout, Zoom fatigue. I think it's a huge discussion, but let me say something. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. I think there were more people that decided to do training in the pandemic, the age of the pandemic, than would have ever gone to an in-person, face-to-face, leader-led. And we may have gotten some people off of their duffs and into some kind of training than ever before. I think the job of the industry trainers and participants is to actually have gone to school and figure out how you really do virtual training. How do you participate as a participant, and how does the teacher or the leader of the class do what they do? I believe that Zoom, GoToWebinar, Google Meets is a tool. It's not the venue, it's the tool. And you or we have to make the venue. And that is, if I'm standing up in front of a camera with a TV screen or a whiteboard, but a little animation, a little feedback. And I know you've all got such great, I mean, I think everyone in the audience and who's going to listen to this as a repurposed podcast is going to learn a ton of stuff. Not only what they should expect from the as a participant and or even a teacher in your own business doing a Zoom, but what you should do as a participant. One of the people here who does an awful lot of this, Jim Kokonis. Jim, I know that CarQuest Technical Institute has done a ton of stuff to prepare even before the pandemic hit. I almost think you guys, you know, you had the proof of concept. You saw the future. And then in order to prove what you had, multiple cameras, a studio designed and developed, hands-on stuff. Jim, is this the future of training so that we're not zoomed out?
I definitely think this is going to continue to be a part of training. There's economy of scale. There's all those things. But I'm going to tell you something I'm a firm believer in. Yeah, we were starting to change what we were looking at for content development, for resources for instructors, to get away from what we've now started to call flat content. Here's a picture and a PowerPoint slide with words. We were working to get away from that and change how we develop content before all this hit. And then when it was like, well, we can't even get this out to people the way we traditionally did. So now we launched into a virtual world. And we didn't really go for huge numbers and giant classes. We went for proof of concept. And we spent probably the first 6 months there, wouldn't you say, Anthony? And so it was all what works and what doesn't work. And what we found was what doesn't work in a live class doesn't work in Zoom either. And it doesn't work in StreamYard, and it doesn't work anywhere. You know, do you have to have a talking head on the screen? Do they have to be able to see me? Show of hands. You know, we're all sitting around here talking. Show of hands. How many of you guys have ever watched a show like Our Amazing Planet or something like that? It's shot in 4K. The images are beautiful. The dialogue from some guy, typically with a British accent, just a great, you know, just a great voice. And now we'll stand back and watch as Charles attempts to neuter the wildebeest, whatever. But you don't ever see, you don't ever see them. But tell me you can't sit there and watch that for hours, because the content's engaging. It's amazing. And it's virtual, and we're going around the world. So I'm tired of hearing it can't be done. I want to hear what everybody else says.
We watched Deadliest Catch for how many seasons and never saw Mike Rowe's face.
We didn't need to. He had that baritone voice.
Exactly. You
know?
Exactly.
He's got that Kent voice. Just As a trainer, when you do a virtual thing, something that I see a lot of is guys getting like this in front of the camera, and I can't see anything that they're projecting on the screen. I can't even see their presentation, and their presentation is literally the same presentation that they used in a classroom. So the type font is about this big, and the guy that didn't follow the instructions that you sent for the meeting anyway is like this on his phone, like, what is going on? What is that? Right. So there is a reformat that has to be done. There totally does. Yep. I still think that them seeing you, to place you, to recognize you, to have some sort of, for lack of better terms, human connection is mm-hmm. necessary. But I totally agree with you. You shouldn't be the star of the screen whenever you're doing a presentation. And I think that's kind of what your point is, right?
The idea here is that we're not really going to be focusing on the trainer so much. It's more about the people that are actually taking in the content. Mm-hmm. They are the stars of the show. They are the focus, and we need to think about it that way. How we present, you can either show your face or not, but if you're not engaging the person who's behind the screen, then what's the point?
But that same problem was long before Zoom. We had a problem in the classroom. How many teachers are very entertaining up in front of the classroom? They're big hand gestures, or they move and they speak, and they're the focal point, not the information.
Do you think that was to help maintain some level of interest? Because when you're doing in-person classes, it can get very dry and it can get boring. So, you know, they've been told for years, be a little more entertaining. I was a scout leader for many years, and it was always, you know, the bigger the fool, the more you're cool. So, if you can, you know, make it entertaining, maybe you would get a little bit, hold their interest a little bit better.
It's a combination of the three very important things. It's the information that you're trying to give out. It's the engagement that you're getting from the students, and it's the transformation that the student is going to experience throughout that entire presentation. So what do they get during the class, and what can they take with them that they can use immediately after. And I think that was missed, you know, initially with the, with, you know, instructor led in-person classes. And it's definitely missed now that things are both simpler and more complex at the same time.
Oh, this is by far more complex, by far. Absolutely. And I think anybody that does online content right now will tell you there's probably twice as much work, if not three times, to put on a digital production as it would be to do the same 2 or 4 hour seminar.
One of the issues that we're running into is that there's trainers who are not used to this type of format. And so with somebody like my dad, what we did is we've got several dynamic camera shots. We've got his PowerPoint in front of him. In fact, half of the time we don't even show PowerPoint because it's more about how he's engaging with the student. And, you know, show top down of him writing. It's all of these different things to allow him to teach somewhat within his normal realm and still get an engaging experience for the student.
So we need to get a Planet Earth style production that's engaging, that's clean, that's crisp. You've got people switching camera shots in the PowerPoint, you know, a click to your dad, that's keeping movement going on, because we don't want to be bored by staring at an individual small person with a PowerPoint that you can't even read the type on. This isn't going away, in my opinion. We're going to have something called hybrid training. You know, we're going to figure out this virtual, whatever we want to call it, when the world opens up and we all want to go out and we want to hug each other and have a beer at the bar someday. But we're also going to we're going to drag more people over the line to training with this virtual. But we have to do it better. And in fact, it's time to think about doing it better now and not wait for 2 years down the road and have failed at making training the biggest thing in our industry.
You've got to look right now. You've got vision happening. And vision was not possible for a lot of people because they can't travel. They can't take that time off. I've been to Vision many years. And the fact that I can watch content live and still interact with the instructor is great. Also, there are multiple classes happening at Vision. Sometimes I want to see both of them, but you can't because there's two classes happening at one time. And now you've got the opportunity to watch that anytime. I mean, for the next month, they're giving you access to it. So that type of thing opens up opportunity, whereas in a facility where you have to hold a ton of people, you can't actually watch every class or attend every class you wish to do. And now you can. I have Zoom burnout. I quit BNI because of Zoom burnout. It drives me absolutely crazy because I don't engage that way. I mean, the cognitive load is so much higher. It takes so much more brain power to just to watch you guys and try to pay attention to social cues. And it drives me crazy. I'm an in-person kind of person. With that said, sometimes the trainers are restricted in what they can deliver because it's on a Zoom platform, and they do that same thing. They watch social cues. They watch for eye contact, and they watch for people drifting off, or you can't see what's happening with your classroom when everybody's on a computer. You can just assume they're paying attention to you. But in a classroom where a teacher uses that content to engage with them, it's much harder now.
Hey, Vinny, I'd like to push against the idea of we understand body language. Though body language is very important, I've in the last only couple of years that I've been sitting in classes, there's a lot of teachers that think they understand body language. And they say, oh, you know, everybody's nodding, so they're with me. They understand, which has been proven time and time again to be the biggest false forward move ever. But you did touch on a very important part, which is the engaging. And I think that's where Zoom burnout comes from. And that Zoom burnout was here long before Zoom. We were disengaged in our meetings. We were disengaged in a lot of classes where we have to sit and listen for 2 hours straight while somebody yaps on and on and on about a product or a different tool or a different skill set. When engaging us, Zoom burnout, I don't think would be a thing if more people were better at engaging their audience, if they were able to have these conversations. Yeah,
it's true, but multitasking becomes a problem because everybody wants to multitask, especially when the teacher's not watching, who's on their phone. When you have the opportunity to do that, it's much easier on Zoom. It's much easier to kind of get away with doing other things.
How did you know I was playing games on my phone?
Exactly.
Anthony, to flip back to what you were saying, I agree. One of the biggest things that you have in in-person training is an instructor that, hey, is everybody with me? Are we all grasping this? And you get, They don't understand. They have, it's no idea. What I have noticed, though, is, and because I've had guys that have come to in-person training with me, and then those same guys have been in virtual training with me, what I have seen is they are more willing to ask questions when they don't understand, when everybody in the room can't see them. So yes. That is the one benefit that I have seen to virtual is the guy, you know, you would think that in the automotive trade, it's full of type A personalities, right? You walk into a shop and it is nothing but type A's. I was not aware of this until I started going out and doing big training events that social anxiety is a huge issue with some of these guys. And it's because we live our life in a box, literally. I mean, Jim is in his box right now. You can see the box that we all live in, right? So these guys aren't used to looking dumb or asking questions in front of other people. And, you know, it's that old adage we all heard when we were in school. There's no such thing as a dumb question. But to actually apply that, most people just would rather not ask the question, or at the lunch break, you get hammered with 25 people lined up to talk to you. That does not happen now in Zoom. I see more questions in the chat that typically don't get asked.
And proof of the concept is in the in-person world, you've had guys that have been coming to, you know, we had this region model running and guys that have been coming to these classes for years. And finally, one of them will hit the point to walk up and go, "Hey, so can you explain this voltage drop thing to me?" The pushback on people with these comments about learning styles and all those other things. One of the things I did want to say is through our experimentation, a lot of our group has come to feel that the platform is exceptionally important to be successful in this environment. And that means if you're really trying to engage, this opportunity here is better. Can you turn the student's microphone on and let them ask a question? Do you allow those students to question you now, just like in the middle of class? Or do you go, hold all questions for the end, we'll get to it. And then it we never get there.
No, you have to let them interrupt.
You have to let them interact. And then that becomes important because the platform, certain platforms have a lag or delay. So what the student's seeing and where we are, if it's not in sync within a few seconds, that can make for a real awkward scenario. And I'll grease whoever said it was like, this was a lot of work. I'm going to liken it to when I got my first motorcycle, the first time I accelerated to over 100 miles an hour with a motorcycle and how fast that was. And the tunnel vision, you guys saw me playing with backgrounds, you know, the X-Wing fighter flying down the trench. There's just so much happening. And the first time I got on a Zoom and I was trying to watch chat and make comments and work my presentation and use whatever resources I had up and pay attention to my own camera views, my brain was firing at just a ridiculous speed because we cannot multitask. That's a myth. You can only switch quickly between topics. I will say that once you get familiar with it and you're set up, I'm sitting here behind three screens right now. And if I was teaching a class, I'd be using every piece of this real estate because it gives me the ability to put things where I can go look for them instead of how many times have you seen this? Where did that
go? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All the time. Yep.
And then the students are being like, you know, what is that all about? Is this guy prepared? And he may know the material great, but he just got lost in his environment.
A big takeaway that I think of this segment is that we need to have Q&A happening during, not after. And I guess if I was participating and watching and says, hey, shoot me any questions in the chat. Ooh, that means I have to have someone with me. As a producer or as a Q&A person.
You should always have a moderator.
Yeah.
Got to have somebody. I don't necessarily mean a virtual person. Can I name somebody sitting right next to you that says, hey?
We generally have an operator who will sit in front, and instead of having our trainers actually watch the chat and do all that, their focus is just to teach the content, teach it the way they need to do it. And then they'll raise their hand and go, we have a question. And they'll ask it verbally so that not only can the students hear it, but the teacher can hear it. And you have that interaction. It goes back to immediate feedback.
Yeah. Put that person on the mic. Let's find out what the question is. Now I'm engaged. Now I'm in this thing. Every 10, 12 minutes, based on the finesse of the trainer, they realize that part of their success is to stop and interrupt.
I think Jim kind of touched on it a few minutes ago that the content itself has to be somewhat fluid. It can't be a rigid content because, like he talked about with lag, there's things where the guy is a slow typer and it might have taken him 3 minutes to get his question typed in, or he typed it in and didn't hit enter. But with that chat there and you having a moderator, even if I don't get to it right now, typically what most of your successful virtual teachers are doing right now, or instructors, is 25-minute or one-hour pauses. When we do web-based things, no matter how long they are, every hour on the hour, you get a 10-minute break. And I jokingly tell guys, look, this is the only time you have ever been allowed to shotgun a beer during class. Get up, go to the restroom, shotgun your beer. And if there is a question that I didn't cover, I will cover it as soon as we come back through the chat. Or if you have one, please ask that question right now. And we go back through and filter, and it keeps guys from getting lost. Because you're right, in class time, a lot of instructors in the actual world will say, well, let's wait till we get to the end of this section, or let's wait till we, you know, take our lunch break. That's 4 hours away.
But what you were saying earlier about, you know, when does everybody understand and everyone nods their heads? Obviously, they don't. That chat is what gives you, that's your feedback, if they really understand or not.
Yep.
And I think it also helps. Somebody might be reluctant to ask a question, you know, like you said, the social anxiety. But when you start seeing a number of those questions pop up, it kind of builds your confidence a little bit to, hey, maybe I will ask my question. And there can be more and more of them that come up from that. I know I always say, you don't know what you don't know. Sometimes you might be totally on board. Somebody asks a question and all of a sudden you've got three questions because their question triggered your thought process. What do you do? This. It might be leading you totally down a rabbit hole going somewhere else, but at the same time, that gives feedback to the instructor that there's an area that they need to cover.
You need to build in breakpoints. And I often, you know, like go to 3 to 5 topics, keep it really short and sweet, whatever you're delivering. And after every single topic or segment you're doing, take a minute and just, you know, I'm open for questions. Always, hey, Jason or Emily or whoever's in the chat, if you guys have a question, let me know. I'm going to take a drink real quick. And you just build in those breakpoints so they feel more and more comfortable to interrupt you during in-betweens.
Hey, Carm here. And coming up, the panel asks you, are we just too casual when we're on a Zoom call? Hey, you know, auto repair is a high-dollar, high-value transaction, and your customer sensitivity about how much it costs and why is never more important than when you ask them to pay the bill. While these conversations can sometimes feel awkward or uncomfortable, it's important that you don't fall down and cheapen your services at the final step. Shopware's shop management platform now offers a solution that helps you showcase the value and sophistication that you've invested throughout the repair. With our innovative digital workflow, customers can review, approve, and even pay for services right from their smartphone. Let remote pay work for you and improve your customer experience. Get started today. Visit GetShopware.com for more information and to request a demo. Hey, Carm here. Are your competitors ranking higher than you in search? Is your marketing company using plain vanilla recycled content? And does your marketing look like every other shop's and you're not even sure it's working? Powerful, effective marketing is not cookie cutter. It should showcase all of the things that are unique about your business. Don't you think you deserve better results? It's time to make a change. Our good friends at Shop Marketing Pros are past shop owners and industry veterans. They get it. Their process is pretty simple. Listen, create, and do. They spend time getting to know you and create a unique marketing message and then do the heavy lifting for you so you can do what you do best, run a shop and fix cars. Do yourself a favor. Give your shop the top-notch marketing it deserves. Schedule a call today on the web at shopmarketingpros.com. That's shopmarketingpros.com. Don't wait. Do it now. I'm loving where this is going. I have two thoughts because that's what I do. I'm the host, you see. And I learn as much as you guys are here to learn and teach. I hear meetings. I hear training. So a lot of times we have corporate meetings, we have friend meetings, we have BNI meetings, we have all kinds of meetings. And there's probably a way that we all need to go to a Zoom class and learn how to play rice in meetings. And then, of course, the training. You guys are bringing great stuff here. We need to learn to be better. So Sometimes you're in meetings and you never get a chance to say anything, Jackie, because you haven't said anything yet.
I'm not very good at interrupting. I usually am the one that is the student and not so much the trainer. Last week, I had the honor of moderating a panel discussion with two other women for Women in Auto Care. So I got the flip side. I got to be on the speaker side of it. The platform they used, you don't get to see your attendees. Other only people you get to see are your other speakers that you're with you. And I have to say, it's tough to not have the interaction other than the chat and seeing people's faces. And I understand when you have like 200 some attendees, you can't have 200 tiny little screens all over your one screen. It is tough to not have the faces, like you have that delay, you're not getting questions as fast as you want. You're going through your material 20 times faster than you might have if you were in person. It's difficult. All of you must do more training than I do on a virtual aspect of things. And I applaud you guys if you're able to do that well, because that's tough. As more of the student end of things, we constantly use Zoom for my boys in school. I have community things as well as work things, and it is difficult just to sit there. I remember the one day I was working in my office, I had my one son with me, blew my mind because the students, the teacher wanted them to have their mics on. All you hear is one kid saying they need to pee. Another kid is yelling at his mom or his brother. I couldn't remember what. And then I have a major pet peeve of a smoke detector beeping when the battery is low. And here I hear this smoke detector beeping in someone's background. And as a former firefighter, that is just one of my biggest pet peeves. And so I'm sitting there just listening to this and like begging my son to turn it off. The Zoom for me, I'm getting so sick of it. I miss the one-on-one in-person interactions that I used to have right before all this.
I felt that what you're saying about all the stuff, it made it a lot of the very informal. You know, nobody gets dressed anymore. I that really doesn't matter, but it's just no. It seems like nobody cares. You know, I'm as a scout leader, we were holding virtual scout meetings. Sometimes they'd be in uniform, sometimes they wouldn't. As a city councilman, I've been a city councilman for 11 years now. When this all happened and we started doing virtual meetings, my mayor called me and said, "Did you see that city councilman that did his council meeting from his hot tub?
Oh,
what can we do to top that?" And I told the mayor straight up, I said, "I think you just delegitimize what we're doing. We're in the middle of this, you know, emergency, if you will." I don't think we were calling it a pandemic at the time, but we're in this emergency. And if we're going to be, you know, trying to top, you know, this isn't the police dancing videos. Where this is something where people are looking to us for leadership, and you want to make a mockery of it. And I didn't say that, you know, mockery, but I thought it was, what, we just want to make it too casual? I didn't think that was right or professional.
This is one of the biggest issues right now, is because beforehand we had boundaries. You have school and you have work and you have home. And you
exactly.
And this virtual beast has completely demolished those boundaries. So, of course, we're going to have a lack of professionalism, a lack of seriousness when we're having meetings, because they're constant. They're all the time. Everything is done through a Zoom meeting now. Is it school? Is it work? Is it training? Is it, you know, meeting up with friends? Whatever it is, it's all through the same video camera feed now.
My daughter did her senior year of high school half the year on Zoom. So she did it from the kitchen table, or it was a Google Meets, I think is what it was. But every day she drank out of her same coffee cup, a big yellow cup that says, "I'm a ray of effing sunshine," and it wasn't effing. And she drank on that every day, and every teacher commented on it, and they laughed about it. But, you know, I mean, maybe it brought levity to it. But at the same time, if she would have brought that to school, she'd have been, that wouldn't have been acceptable.
But that's the thing. It's because it's in your house. Mm-hmm. They don't have any control over what's in your house.
I've been stuck in my house since March 13th last year, right after Vision. I work remotely. I've been at home school teacher to my second grader. He's been on Zoom every day. I've been on Zoom 4 or 5 times a week. I've been on Zoom with him. So that's 10 times a week minimum. One thing that we do to prevent that burnout and create those boundaries is we have not changed our routines at all. We get up in the morning, we get dressed, we brush our teeth, we eat our breakfast. I walk the dogs. aside from getting in the car and going to school, or me getting in the car and going wherever it is I'm going to work, we try to maintain that same routine to trick our brain into still having those same boundaries. Because like Scott and Ken are talking about, you're exactly right. I have had to turn people's cameras off in class. If we have a small meeting like this, the guy's sitting there in a wife beater eating Cheetos on his couch, watching TV with his phone pointed at him like this. So there's that huge boundary issue. And I think that if people treat this for what it should be, which is the opportunity to really nail down your personal routines and that strength of character for how you operate daily, it kills some of the burnout. And I know tons of people that are now banished remotely for the rest of their career because their employer has realized that they saved $17 million last year by not having people in an office, and they can still monitor their employees' productivities, and they're working at home. And they're all having to do the same thing. They have to get up, get dressed, take their kids to school, and they have to continue with that same routine. And that will help with some of your burnout, especially if you're one of the unlucky people that has to spend 6-7 hours a day in virtual meetings.
Justin, your example there about the wife beater eating Cheetos. Just the other day, there was an article about this. A judge said that he had a gentleman come before him on Zoom for a child support hearing, and he was in nothing but his boxer shorts, and he thought that was appropriate for court. I'm at home. I can do what I want.
All I keep hearing here, guys, is, and lady, rules, disciplines, professionalism, and you're absolutely right. I was on a Zoom meeting last night. Somebody couldn't get in. They had to reboot. The computer didn't work. What about the microphone? Change computers. By the time we got into the meat of the meeting, it was 15 minutes in. But that individual was important to the discussion. And you sit there, you want to get Zoom fatigue? No one prepares. No one is ready. You can't even see the person's face because it's so dark. I won't do a podcast unless they've got the right microphone and everything, because my quality, my audio, our view matters. And shouldn't it matter to the participant? You know, who's ever calling the meeting actually should send that, like I send out emails. You got to have this and this and that and that and that if you want to play. Zoom is the tool. We've got to set the venue, and we've got to set the quality. We got to set it right.
I totally agree with that. And Justin, I think you make a good point. When post-vision, when I found out that this was going to be reality for a while, I made it a point to set up a home office. I bought a desk, and I have my monitors mounted up on the wall, and I got everything set up. And I walk in here when I'm home for my meeting. Now, there's times when I'll work in here, and my cat will be climbing on the shelf behind me, and my pit bull will be beside me, but not during this time, because I don't want you guys to hear me talk to my cat in the manner to which he sometimes deserves. So, but I think those boundaries are important, but I also think that a loss of some of the rigidities of the past. We're talking about, this is Vision, right? And I remember I went to Vision a couple of years ago. There was an instructor's roundtable, or instructor's meeting presentation, and it was about dealing with millennials in the shop. They were going through, and the conversations would come up, what do you do with cell phones? Boy, the diversity on how that's handled. And even within automotive shops, right? Some people realize a cell phone helps me with pictures and this, and now we're giving them devices, but it's my device and it's okay to use this one, whereas the other one has been a tool for years. I was sitting in a class in Vision, and I asked the instructor a question, what's the code set criteria? He said, I don't know. I went on my service information. I looked it up in class, and he just spent, 45 minutes explaining how to use a scope to tell me this thing was 7 degrees off, and the code set criteria is 6 degrees for 9 seconds. The computer told me it was 7 degrees off or more, And so I'm sitting here and I'm using this, and I'm like, well, how do we use these tools? And some of the breakdown of getting rid of some of those old, here's a term Anthony's eyes will probably perk up at, stand and deliver techniques, and breaking down some of those formalities has been a good thing. So I think there's a balance there. That's all I was trying to say, is we can't throw out some of the benefits. Like automotive trainers, hands up. We know what it's like when we tried to take 15 or 20 guys out into the shop and show them something. And so what you'd have is 3 or 4 guys standing around a scan tool that they might be able to see. Isn't it amazing that we don't have screen burnout from all that stuff? It's only this. So, you know, so don't sit there and tell me that's what it is. We had guys in a live environment where five of them would be trying to learn. The others are over talking about NASCAR or the football game. And so now we've discovered that with the right media and the tools and people to help you, I can give every one of you a shot of the actual scan tool screen. We could be talking alignments, and I can be piping the screen from the alignment machine out that you can see at full screen, or a camera right here by the wheel as I'm making the adjustment, and dual screen those. And I can do that for 20 people and everybody can see. So I think we need to learn to use and value these tools the way they're effective.
So, Carm, when I was the first one in the waiting room, and that's just because I just happened to get off the phone before anybody else, and I logged in. And the first thing I said to you when I got on the meeting was what, Carm?
How do I sound? And he showed me his bag of tricks, and I said it could be better because I care. Understand something. When we republish this as a podcast, more people are going to listen to this as a podcast. And I always tell people, do you want to be the person that doesn't sound great and people turn you off? You have something great to say. It's the power of the voice. If you're going to be in a video meeting, your voice still has to be there.
You were talking about technical failures. And if you want to have a Zoom burnout, have a bunch of people that are on iPads or cell phones attending. It's a bi-directional class, because no matter what phone you have, when you're in a Zoom meeting, you get an echo effect and it kills everybody else and it strains all of us. And then you have the guy that camera fails, laptop won't stick up. I have every camera. I have every headset. Like Jim said, I'm looking at two other monitors. I'm actually using a production quality camera in front of me right now. I have stuff going on over here. I have stuff going on over here. What my point is yes, everybody has a laptop or everybody has a device. Now, here's the downside. There is not a laptop made that has a good web camera on it. There's
what are you
not.
Talking about? I am running off of my laptop, by the way. I have a microphone. I have a Presonus audio box that is plugging USB into my laptop. This entire setup, I have a light here, and that's it. Just a laptop.
As far as video quality, what I'm saying is the laptops. I'm sitting in front of an Acer Predator right now, a 2021 Acer Predator, and the camera on it's terrible. And this is a $2,200 laptop. So what I'm asking is that guys pay attention to how they're coming to class, not just the presenters, but the attendees as well, whether it's a meeting, whether it's a presentation, or whether it's a training, right? So this is a meeting because we're all interacting. And then a training is more like what Jim and I do on the regular. And then a presentation is where everybody just logs in and watches you put on a show. Either invest in good equipment or have backups and be prepared to swap, because no matter how good you are, you're going to have it. This camera failed me at Bimmer's this year and Sherry got mad at me and I had to swap cameras on the fly. Basically what it is check your equipment, make sure you have good equipment, because although it is frustrating for you, it is frustrating for everyone else in the room as well, especially with audio.
I love hearing these gripes. I've been a gamer for quite a long time, and this is the stuff that we've dealt with in Discord channels when we're trying to do a raid, you know?
I remember doing an episode with a service advisor trainer, and while we were doing our icebreaker call, he actually showed me his studio that he created. He's got like 365 inchers, and everybody that's on his weekly class, he can see face to face, and he interacts, and anything goes, and it is as virtual as you could get, but it is as engaging as you can get. I love the premise of this whole entire webcast today. It's as much about the trainer as it is about the student and the participation of the student. So we just can't be a talking head with a PowerPoint anymore. I think that's the conclusion. And I think that's what's called Zoom fatigue, or at least burnout from our training end. If I'm going to be a virtual trainer, you better go out and spend X amount of money on a switcher and on cameras and stuff to make it exciting. And I don't think you could do it alone. It's tough to produce a show by your own, especially if it's a live feed. And then one other thing that I really want to bring up, and I want to hear your reactions to. So many trainers were really affected by the pandemic in our industry. I worry about losing some really great trainers because their income was, you know, almost went away. And when they did get a chance to do a seminar, then, you know, based on the venue they were at, anyone could watch the class over and over again. And they would normally go from the next city to the next city and get paid for that stuff. What's your take on that, gang?
Thank God we have Zoom, or thank God we have video conferencing. You know, once again, Vision. Look at what Sherry did and how she handled Vision, and how I'm a trainer. I would have never done that in person. You know, I wouldn't have done a class in person because, you know, as much as I like the spotlight, I don't like to be in front of that many people. Now I can hide behind my camera a little bit. I'll be teaching a class there. So thank you. It allows for opportunity.
The issue with that is, so like Harm was saying, they'd be able to go from show to show. They'd be able to make money every time they taught that class. Now what's happening is you've got trainers who teach that course once, the venue, the association, the whatever ends up filming that content, your course, and they leave it up and available for a month, 2 months, 3 months. Some of them are leaving them up indefinitely for their membership. And that is a revenue stream for those trainers to be able to teach those courses. And now they don't get to make as much money on those courses because they're not teaching them anymore. They teach it once and they're done. Where are they supposed to go from there?
Well, they should sell it appropriately as well. They should.
Correct.
Whoever is giving the content out should understand that, hey, if you want to leave it up for a month, then I want to get paid such and such versus, you know, doing a one-time class. And, you know, if they're not willing to pay for the content, then you go to somebody
who
is. But
our industry has not reacted that way. We have never been such a giving industry. We want to help people. We also want to stay relevant, right? We don't want to disappear in the background. So as trainers in our industry, we had to be there when we were asked to be there.
And that's one of the biggest issues is that now everybody's doing training. There's always another class. There's always another thing going on. And if you're not staying relevant and you're asking too much, they're going to move on and find someone else. You had an uprising of trainers and individuals and companies who never did training before that got into the space because it was more convenient. It was more cost effective. And they jumped on the scene because it's a great marketing piece.
Y'all may hate me for this, but I'm gonna throw a monkey wrench in the whole thing real quick. Justin touched on something a second ago. There's a difference between presenting, training, and then you said something else. I forget what the third thing was.
Meetings.
Delivering content. If you can record and watch that video and watch it at any time, then all you did was deliver content. You didn't teach anything. And I think that's something that our industry is sorely missing across the board. Every single class I keep going into, if you're talking for more than 80% of the time, you're not teaching, you're presenting, you're giving content. And if everything you say I get out of a book or by watching you later without interacting, then you didn't teach. If you're truly teaching, you should be talking less than those that are in your class. Teaching inside a classroom means that your students are trying to expand, they're trying to grow, and you're simply facilitating that growth. So I think to say that a trainer is losing out because they can record and show it again and again and again and people can learn from it, that's bogus BS. That is a presentation. You wrote a book and gave it away for free. That's your fault. You should have marketed, trademarked it on paper and then sold it in Barnes & Noble.
There's a thing that I constantly say to myself. Telling isn't teaching. Showing isn't teaching. I didn't know I wanted to be a teacher until I was in my late 20s to early 30s. And some of you know this, and it was, you know, quite a few years ago and quite a few pounds ago. I started teaching through hobbies. I started teaching people to build and fly radio-controlled airplanes, but then where I really got into the teaching process and thinking about it was in a martial arts studio. I was there 4 to 6 days a week, hours at a time. You told them what you were going to teach them. You showed them what you were going to teach them. You had them do it and tell you back what they were learning, what they were doing, and it was an immersive process.
So, Jim, do you know what that's called? It's called the EDGE method. Explain, demonstrate, guide, and enable.
We call it five-step training. Mm-hmm. In one of the programs I was in with a big national account, it was prepare, tell, show, do, and follow up.
And but that becomes blah, 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 blah. It, well,
it's not you know, and an edge is on a weapon. So terminology gets fun, but what we need to think about are, you know, not what it's called. I mean, how many times have we seen this? Oh, we're going to do a diagnostic process class. And what is it? It's a checklist. That's not diagnostic thought process. That's a checklist. Okay. And if you're following a checklist, it's no different than a checklist on a code that I need because I don't understand the system. And so if we're trying to teach somebody who truly understands, they're going to have all the components to make the right decision without having to have somebody stand behind them and play marionette.
Justin had something he was talking about, taking breaks and allowing questions for students. And again, in a presentation, that's important. You got to stop and let people ask some questions. But in teaching, your students shouldn't be the one asking questions. You should. If our job as a trainer, as a teacher, is to ask questions to get them to think outside the box or to get them to expand out and make a choice to follow a path. When teaching diagnostic process, I've sat in a few of them, and there's a couple of great instructors that have a huge following, but I get frustrated because they tell me all the times they diagnose the vehicle, and they tell me how they diagnose the vehicle. They tell me all these cool little tricks, but here's the thing. They never stop. Said, okay, here's the scenario. Let me set it up. What would you do? And let me say, okay, all right, this is how you did it. So I would do this. I would pull codes. I would check this. I would hook up my scope and have them go, well, what are you looking for on the scope? That should be the teacher's position to ask the questions. Teachers should be the ones giving questions out, not the students. The students should be, and again, there's presentations. Those are important. You have to get the information out. But don't confuse being a presenter with being a teacher. Don't confuse with being a presenter and being a trainer.
I have to get back to this, Anthony, because I disagree. Because the point is, it's not within the trainer's control whether or not their stuff is going to be recorded. And I say that because obviously they can choose to opt out. But the pressure of the industry right now is you've got bigger companies, bigger associations who are putting on these events that trainers are doing. They're recording the content and keeping it available. Now, I could present a course. I could teach a course. I could engage with students during that. But it's going to be filmed. It's going to be recorded. It's going to be sent out. Right? And then you've got them giving away this content for free all the time. So when you talk about putting this point of, I'm going to be a teacher, I'm going to be engaging the student, you know, we can't present anymore. Well, after the fact, it's not in their control. They no longer have control of the content in that manner. That's the point I was trying to make, is that it's removing the opportunity for trainers to be making a living. And the people who are going to hold their value and go, well, you're going to have to charge me this. Eventually, a lot of companies aren't going to pay for it because there's always going to be someone else who's going to do it for free because they'll get the exposure.
Can I just express my absolute gratitude for everybody's willingness to take a minute and let the next person speak? Zoom burnout happens when you have 50 people talking over each other. And out of probably 300 meetings in the last year, this has to be the best organized as far as everybody taking their turn and then shutting up and letting somebody else have their turn. So thank you. Sorry, Anthony, go ahead.
I agree with you that you have intellectual property, and if it's your content that's being redistributed without you getting any royalties from it or any additional pay for it, that is a problem. But that's something that needs to be discussed on the front side. But again, remember, me recording you teaching, Kent, is different than me you telling me about something. If you're presenting to me on how GDI works, I can record it and send that out all day long. People can see how GDI works. But if you're going to teach me how to diagnose GDI, I can record that all day long. It's going to be hard for somebody to watch and do anything with it. That's not you explaining every aspect. That's you sitting back, watching me come to failure, helping me overcome that failure and continue moving forward. So if you were teaching me, you wouldn't have the big screen. You would have less than 50% of the time on the screen.
Hey, look at everyone. I like where this is going. I really do. But I want to bring Charlie Burke from CTI. Thanks, Charlie, for being here. Great panel. How about a few examples of what has worked for you guys to engage and entertain in this time of visual burnout? And I think that this whole thing is about visual burnout, Zoom fatigue, and is because we're not paying attention. We're not coming disciplined. Any ideas to keep not only the trainer engaged, but the audience, Vinny?
You know, a lot of it's mobility. We sit here, you're sitting in a chair, you're not moving, there's no exercise. So take a break. It's okay to turn your camera off as a viewer. Obviously not the presenter or the teacher, but turn your camera off. Get up, do some jumping jacks, stretch a little bit. move around, get a cocktail, whatever it is. Use your powers. I can turn you off right now. I can mute myself. I can stop my camera and use those tools that you have. I mean, you have those tools most of the time, and you know, it can become very fatiguing to just sit in place, and it's very fatiguing to try to catch. There's only eight of you, but I'm trying to catch eight people's eye contact or facial expressions and trying to, you know, engage with that. And sometimes you just got to turn it off, and that's okay.
Some of the best teachers, Bill Hill says, are great storytellers. They leave us wanting more. And I think you've got to move around. I think you've got to have, you know, as a trainer, and Ken, I think you believe this because you're doing that at the Institute. There's stuff that's going on that's just not a talking head in a PowerPoint. I don't think we as the receivers of that information, there's another talking head in a PowerPoint again.
It's a different medium. It's really an individual experience. And so when you talk about storytelling, you need to tell the story that the student is experiencing. So like in my classes, instead of presenting like this, I'll have my general content that I'm going to teach the information, but the whole entire class is an exercise. We're doing and creating this. So my accountability course, we did a strategy. So we did a strategy session. We built a plan, a timeline, goals, and we mapped it all out so that by the end of the class, they had something to go and use. So it's much more experiential than it is informational or presentation.
I got into the virtual stuff again. It's not burnout, because here's the thing is I've been to Vision. I've been to ASA trainings across the nation. I've been lucky enough that Chris has sent me a bunch of places. All we do is sit for 2 hours. So, I mean, Vinny, I'm with you. Okay. Get up, move around. But I do the same thing in my high school class, because you walk to any high school or college class, what do you do for 2 hours? You're sitting there. It has nothing to do with the virtual world. You got to get up and move.
It does. It takes a lot more energy, a lot more brain power to take what's on the screen than it does to look at one teacher. This takes much more energy and mental capacity.
It's soaking up all of your mental bandwidth because you've got alerts and alarms and things you have to manage as you go along.
Yeah, I'm looking at the private chat. I'm looking at my notes. I'm looking at my laptop. I'm trying to focus on you guys. You go sit in a class, you're just sitting in the class looking at the teacher. So yeah, you're sitting there and they give you breaks. How often do they give you a break to get up and walk around and get a drink?
And when you get to that break, you can interact with people and socialize and network. And that's one of the hardest things about, you know, these type of things is we don't get those networking opportunities.
Correct.
Like we have do in person.
My thought is you can get up and get moving and go around. But I think still it's engaging. That's you moving. And I think it's busier for the teacher. But what we make it busy on our end is because we're getting sidetracked, which same thing happens anywhere. We were tracked in our meetings long before the virtual world. We had our phones underneath the desk instead of up above it. And I mean, that's still the same problems. That had nothing to do with the virtual world. I do see the eye movement, the rapid eye movement, trying to catch everything going on around you as much more stimulant, especially from those who are trying to educate. But even when you go into personal or classes back at, you know, CES or at Vision, let's go to 2 years ago, it's still sitting there. You weren't engaging. And with storytelling are good, but sometimes they're just amusement. And amusement, I mean, that amuse itself comes from two words in Greek, which mean no thought, a muse. And that's not teaching either. If you sat through Tim and Jeff from Console Lab, they have a team-based learning and everybody's up, moving to the middle, moving to the side, moving to the front. Everybody's moving, which is engaging a whole nother aspect of the brain, which then engages the student and creates a better atmosphere for learning. And that loses in the virtual world, but that wasn't being done before the virtual world.
Let's try to put a pin in this thing and wrap it up. And let's just go around the room. Give me 30, 45 seconds. Justin, you're the first.
As far as the burnout goes, I don't think it's the burnout that everybody thinks. Yes, like Jim said, guys can't say, I don't want to be in training because virtual sucks. But then in your email, Jim, you mentioned, but have you watched this guy's YouTube channel? Or they will sit on their couch Saturday and binge watch an entire series of something on Netflix. What the burnout is, partially, is some of it is blue light from the laptop screens because we're not, as viewers, immersing ourselves into bigger monitors. And the physical social interaction. Digital interaction is not the same as physical social interaction. And that's where a big part, you are literally in solitary confinement. Even though I'm on the screen right now with eight of you, this is it. This is me in my little box, right? Jim and I have our own little setup boxes with monitors everywhere. There is a burnout, but I think it's, oh, this sucks. Well, yeah. I mean, how many times do you do the same job on the bay? How many times do you do the same oil filter stand gasket job? 5,000. And it's awesome every time you do it. It's the environment we're putting ourselves in that creates the burnout or the lag, I think.
Thanks, Justin. Vinny?
I'm in Rotary. I'm in BNI. I do other meetings. You know, I'm trying to do training. The burnout comes from the multitude of things that were, I would normally go out and be in person. I hate the computer. I hate even being on it right now. I don't like the computer. So some people don't mind it. Justin seems to be tech savvy. Jim, tech savvy. So when we're physically on camera, we're aware that we're being watched. And, you know, when you're in a video conference, you can't avoid that. So you're constantly performing. You constantly have to act as a performance, or, you know, not pick your nose, not do this, not do that, where you're sitting in a classroom, you know, you're in the front, everybody's behind you. Nobody can see what you're doing. You know, you can't see your face. They see the back of your head. You're in the back of the room. You're watching everybody else. So there's just much more of a load, and it's nerve-wracking and more stressful to be on the computer.
Appreciate you being here, Vinny. Anthony?
It's not virtual burnout. It's not Zoom burnout. We're burnt out of doing some really poor practices in meetings, in classrooms. Doesn't make a difference. The poor practice, it sucked before virtual world. It sucked out, and some bosses, they've even pushed it so that you have standing virtual meetings all the time. So, I think we need to work on the practices, not the platform.
Great point. Thank you, Kent.
One of the biggest issues, I think, with this quote-unquote Zoom burnout is the fact that we are, I don't know about you guys, but I'm working more than I ever have before because it's convenient, it's easy, it's completely destroyed the boundaries for a lot of people that they had in their lives to separate work, home, you know, social interaction, and it's just this constant overstimulation. One of the issues is that everybody's doing it now. We've got trainers who might get pushed out of the industry. We've got everybody and their uncle doing training, putting content out, both free and paid. And I can see that devaluing the actual training that's going on in the industry that is valuable, because there's always something free that I can go buy. And maybe that's a lower quality, but, you know, it's free. I think there is a Zoom burnout. I think a lot of that training, the issues that you're talking about, Anthony, they were issues that we had before. But that's a different conversation, is about how do we train and engage people. This is like, again, I just overstimulation, no boundaries, too much.
Great points, man. Jackie?
I'm right there with you, Ken, about there's just no boundaries. I have an autistic son who is on a hybrid schedule at school. He's at school for 4 days, and one day a week he has to be on Zoom. And he hates that home now has to be school as well as school. As far as some of his biggest fights with us are, home is for play, school is for school. And so that's what we fight with big time. And I'm right there with Vinny about the human interactions. That's where my burnout comes from. I just miss being with people. And I tend to be an introvert. And so it's kind of funny that I want to be with other people more so than I want to be on a computer screen with them.
Jim, great stuff today. Thank you. Your final words?
Agree 100% with Justin and others. The production value has to be good. You cannot have somebody trying to stream a video of your computer screen playing a video. It just ain't going to work. Okay. Carm, you've got a background in this. You know, that's an episode of failure right there, but we've seen it, right? We've seen it. So practice, know what works, make sure you can engage. Telling isn't teaching. Telling isn't communicating either. And so pick up books, teaching through questions, or, you know, fierce conversations, and don't be afraid to have a conversation about what works and what doesn't, and bring those students in and bring your employees in. Have an actual discussion where you're asking them questions. Leaders, good leaders, lead through questions, because if you ask someone the right question, they may come up with the answer on their own and they can truly use that tomorrow.
Scott, you got the last word.
the whole idea of, you know, virtual trainings, all that stuff, that was, you know, that was coming down the pike. It wasn't something that was unheard of. It was going to become more and more common. Unfortunately, we were thrust into it. We went from this is going to happen to crisis mode. When a crisis happens, you know, everybody scrambles and they do whatever they do, and what sticks to the wall sticks to the wall. As a population, if we had a chance to ease into it, we would have had some better results. There was no guidelines or no rules. It was just here, do it and make it work. So I think, you know, we've done a pretty good job of getting through it, but as we return back to our normal world, which I think is one of the things we just miss, our normal world. We miss pre-COVID. I lost a whole bunch of weight and now it's back. I'm back to my pre-COVID weight. Am I happy that I'm back to pre-COVID? I don't know. We miss some of the old stuff and we're kind of tainted the way things are right now.
This went places I didn't expect. I appreciate all your great talking points, the effort that you put forth to be here. Some great, great learning curve here. And to everyone's point, we've got to rethink this. It's not going away and we have to make it better. But you know what? We've always done that as an industry, but we have got to do it probably a little faster than we expect. Hey, everyone, have a super duper weekend. Thank you all for being here.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.